Welcome into the Sports Hub Patriots podcast. I'm Alex Barth from 98.5thesportshub.com. After day 12 of Patriots training camp, this episode's going to kind of be a little bit of two things. We're going to talk about day 12, but it was more of a low-tempo prep day. What I really want to get into is what the Patriots were preparing for, and that's joint practices over the next 2 days against the Carolina Panthers. Here to join us to go through all of that, Chris Gasper from the Boston Globe. You can also hear him on the Patriots pregame show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Alex, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So let's start before practice today. Bill Belichick spoke to the media, and you had a couple questions for him about what the play calling situation is going to look like. Asking him to define the process. Unfortunately, according to him, not enough time to do that. But I think the common thread between what he said and what some of the assistants who also spoke today, who were asked about it, said, it's ongoing, at least according to them, and it's not what you would call competitive, which stood out to me because I had said jokingly in February and then started to wonder if it was a joke. Is this like a position battle? Like we saw, you know, at quarterback last year, corner this year. We didn't get a ton of information again from Bill today, but based on what you heard and what you've seen so far, like piecing it together, where do you think this thing is at? Do you think they know who the play caller is? Do they not know? And like, do you buy it's Patricia or is the door still open?
I think they don't know, Alex. And one of the reasons I asked this question was because what Bill said after the preseason opening loss to the Giants, when he said, you know, it's a process like anything else on the team, like, you know, everything else on the team. So my thought process was, okay, when you're talking about other processes on the team at this point in the season, in the preseason, particularly for the players, most of those processes are related to competition and trying to figure out who's going to get an opportunity. That's why I asked him the question if this was a competitive process between Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and he immediately dismissed that. And later on, Matt Patricia, when I asked him directly, do you feel like you're in a competition with Joe Judge to be the play caller? He said, no, that's not what it is. So what I think they're trying to figure out is, can Matt Patricia do this, or how can Matt Patricia do this and still be the offensive line coach? That is a little bit unusual, I think, in the NFL. And they're trying to figure out, I think, the communication and the division of labor, and they'll make a decision whether they feel like this works or not. Maybe Matt Patricia is the preferred play caller for Bill Belichick, because at least he's called plays before as right. A defensive coordinator, right? But they come to the conclusion that, well, David Andrews can't help us in regular season games do this. And Billy Yates, who's the assistant offensive line coach, maybe he's a little too inexperienced. You know, we really need Matt to focus on the offensive line, and there's not a way to make this work. Or maybe they feel like, okay, we can make this work. He can be the play caller and work with the offensive line, but Joe Judge is going to have to be the conduit and communicate with the quarterback. And you're not going to see Mac Jones sitting next to or conversing with Matt Patricia in between possessions like you would with a normal offensive play caller. So I think that's sort of what they're getting at, is it's a collaborative process. And how do they find the protocol that works best for them?
So what did you make of Thursday night during the preseason game? Matt Patricia called plays while the starters yeah. were in, not really starters. And then when Bailey Zappe came in, it switched to Judge. Do you think that's them keeping Judge ready just in case? Do you think maybe what you're describing, and I think that sounds like a realistic situation, do you think maybe they find themselves in that situation after what happened Thursday night?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think maybe it's one of those things where you're trying to find the best way. And this is something Matt Patricia talked about. You know, he said, I've been around here long enough to know that you don't focus on the end result of the process. You sort of enjoy the journey. And that if we don't do it this way, and I'm sort of paraphrasing here, maybe we'd miss something that we could improve upon, something that could be better. Look, I don't think it's ideal, Alex, at this point, to be sort of experimenting or doing trial by error to figure out what the best way to run your sideline is offensively, or who your play caller is going to be, particularly when neither guy has experience on the offensive side of the ball. And you cannot convince me that going through this exercise, this process, doesn't in some way detract from the readiness of the offense. And I think we've seen that in training camp. But I think overall, this is what they've locked themselves into, and they're going to have to figure it out. So I think, honestly, Thursday night was about finding out, one, are both guys capable of doing it? And two, when we try it two different ways, one is Matt Patricia doing it and addressing the offensive line. Another way is Joe Judge doing it, and Matt Patricia is a little more freed up there. Which one of these ways do we feel works best and is most effective? And I certainly think all eyes Friday night are going to be back on the sideline. It's so weird. Like, the game Thursday was strange to me, Alex, yeah. because I thought there was more focus and fixation on the sideline and more reporters in the press box with their binoculars fixated on the sideline than what was happening on the field.
And yeah, I mean, hand up, I was guilty of that for part of the game because we want to know. We want to know. And I find it funny because this has sort of been the setup on defense for like 3 or 4 years. And we've all just sort of been like, yeah, okay. And often, you know, it's the fantasy football culture, all of that. You mentioned Friday, we'll get a closer look at this. How about Tuesday and Wednesday? How about the joint practices when they get into these game-like situations? I mean, they really try to dress it up like a game. These down markers, they'll run the clock. Sometimes you see them bring officials in. I'm not sure if that will be the case this week or not. We'll find out tomorrow. Are you going to put any stock into what the play calling looks like during the joint practices?
Yeah, and you've been to more of the practices than I have. And obviously the joints are different. These will be the first joints. But, you know, both guys have been calling plays in the practices, right?
Right.
But, you know, this is a little bit different because it's against another team. It wouldn't surprise me if they kept up sort of the same, you know, conceit that they've been doing all training camp, which is we're going to have both of these guys do this. And it seems like they want both guys to be ready. I guess if I had to guess, I'd say Matt Patricia is the preferred guy, but they're asking a lot of Matt Patricia and it is unusual there. So yeah, absolutely. I think you put stock in not only what the protocol is and the approaches during the joint practice, but also how does it work out? You know, and some of it I get, it could be circumstantial and there's some luck involved, but if you're looking at it and suddenly the plays with Joe Judge are more successful than the plays with Matt Patricia, then I think if you're Bill Belichick, you sort of have to consider that.
Before we get further into the joint practices, I mean, the team did practice today. And again, it was a walkthrough. They're going off cards. It really felt like they were almost preparing for a game. And Bill said before practice, you kind of have to do that for the joint practices. He said in some ways they're more valuable in terms of development and evaluation than the game is. So it makes sense they want to be ready. But did anything at today's practice stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, certainly Nelson Agholor, you know, there's been some talk about him maybe not making the team in terms of being dealt somewhere else with that contract or being an odd man out. I think overall, when we talk about this offensive switch, you know, trying to simplify things, trying to streamline things, however you want to talk about it. And I'll be honest, I'm not 100% sure the players fully grasp it. And what I mean by that is you have Brian Hoyer, who played in San Francisco for Kyle Shanahan, saying, there's some similar elements in it. So based off that, today I asked Kendrick Bourne, who played for Shanahan in San Francisco, hey, are there any similarities? He said, no, not really. So, I mean, to me, that sort of speaks. I mean, maybe Kendrick was just being coy.
Right.
Hoyer's a quarterback. He knows offenses, you know, forwards and backwards. So I tend to believe him. And maybe Bourne was just, he didn't want to fuel the fire or whatever. But I also think that's sort of symbolic of an issue the Patriots are having in trying to communicate this, right? And trying to teach this, you know, overall. So I think when you sort of look at where they're at, you know, offensively, they want to do this. So guys like Agholor, who I mentioned, and guys like Jonnu Smith maybe aren't thinking as much and are freed up a little bit to play faster because they want to get more big plays. And I just saw this stat today that Matthew Stafford in that Sean McVay offense had 18 passes last year of 40 yards or more. I mean, you know, generating big plays, that will really help a quarterback. So if they can straighten this out, that's something that could really help them moving down the line. And I think that's what they're trying to do. And maybe there was a little bit of success today with that, with Agholor.
And these next 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday, will be the first real test of that. Most of the starters not playing against the Giants, like Trent Brown said after practice today, that I think he said exactly, this is the first real test for the starting offense. And
that's a good point.
I think when you look at it and the issues the Patriots had when they're practicing against themselves up front, you look at this Panthers defensive line, right? Brian Burns was a Pro Bowler this year. Derek Brown's a top 10 pick. Yetur Gross-Matos was a borderline first round pick last year. They've got talent up front. It really feels like a lot of those questions we were asking last week heading into that Giants game, those are going to be put right under the microscope right away when they line up against the Panthers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's a team they played obviously last year and were able to win that game down in Charlotte. And I think there's some excitement from the Patriots offense and the offensive coaches. You know, Matt Patricia was saying this will be another great week for us again, obviously to be able to see a different team and go out there and practice against a team that maybe hasn't seen all our plays that we've run 17 times over and over. It's kind of a situation where they can't jump those plays. So I thought he said that sort of purposefully, almost to say like, hey guys, media guys and fans, calm down. Like part of our issue is that our defense knows what to expect. And I think that's good when he says that. But the flip side of it is, look, that defense is not going sort of all out full bore a lot of times in these practices. Now you have another team coming in and, you know, they'll be happy to embarrass you if they can. They're going to go out and try and be all out full bore and test themselves. So if you bring in another team that's not familiar with your plays or your playbook or what you're doing, and you scuffle and you struggle, then I think that's sort of going to be more reason for, I don't want to say panic, but I would say consternation when it comes to the installation of this offense. Because when I look at it, Alex, you know, I don't want to sit here and say they're running out of time, but I also feel like this is a huge week for them. They have to make some major progress with this offense, at least with the execution and the comfortability of the players, because you can't go into the season. And I know they had a rough start last year, 1-3, and were able to bounce back, but you don't have the luxury you had during the glory days of the dynasty of saying, well, you know, the first quarter of the season is just an extension of the preseason. With the way the AFC got better this year, if you get off to a slow start, losses in that first sort of quadrant of the season, that first quarter of the season, could be the difference between making the playoffs or not.
Especially, I mean, you not just the record, you look at the opponents. Miami, that's a head-to-head that could certainly matter within the division. But I think Pittsburgh, if Kenny Pickett figures it out, which I'm not super optimistic about, but if he does, that's a potential wild card team you're looking at a head-to-head with. Baltimore could be a wild card team you're looking at a head-to-head with, especially if Lamar Jackson misses time and they kind of get put in that same spot they were last year. So I would agree with that. You talk about getting the offense jump-started, and you know this is going to be a real test of what this offense can do. I think one of the guys they really truly hope to unlock with this is Tyquan Thornton. And he's been maybe the surprise, I don't want to say surprise of camp, because he was top 50 pick and he's playing well, but given their history with drafting wide receivers, given some of the questions about him coming in, I mean, he's really checked every box. And this week to me for him is very exciting, because the question about him coming in was, how's he going to deal with physicality? You know, getting punched in the mouth off the line with the press, fighting for the ball down the field. Carolina's got some big corners and good corners, right? CJ Henderson, JC Horn. They got a 6'3 corner in Keith Taylor. The other interesting one, they have a guy in Kalon Barnes, who was a 7th-round pick this year from Baylor.
Yeah.
So a guy who faced Tyquan Thornton, you would think quite a bit in college, and maybe is familiar with what he does, where, you know, he gets here and it's Jalen Mills and Terrence Mitchell, who haven't really seen him. I really feel like we're going to learn a lot about Tyquan Thornton specifically this week.
And Barnes is a burner too, right?
So yeah.
He can kind of run with them step for step. I mean, the speed with Thornton is noticeable. I think that's the guy that for me has sort of made the most progress. Cause I thought early on in camp, the first couple of days, he wasn't bad, but I just, as a 2nd-round pick, I looked out there and I thought he just really wasn't that noticeable. And I know he's become more and more noticeable throughout camp, just reading a lot of the practice reports. And then obviously he scores the touchdown in the first preseason game, and just watching him a little bit, you can tell that he's not just a straight line speed guy. He does have some quickness, some change of pace, change of direction, a little wiggle, which is what you like. And if you create a system, an offensive system that's easier, that's one of the reasons I think they're doing this, is that
right. It
broadens the pool of players that you can bring in at positions that maybe you've had issues with in the past, like wide receiver, both in terms of free agency, where we've seen guys come here like Joey Galloway and it doesn't work out, or obviously the litany of failed draft picks. If you have a system that's easier to pick up and easier for guys to get, as you said, unlocked, then now your pool of guys that you can bring in is bigger, and you can maybe have some game breakers like a Tyquan Thornton. I know people are really excited about him, and he's built up a lot of momentum, and you want to see if he can continue that momentum against another club, against another team, because as well as the defense has played for the Patriots in training camp, go back to the beginning of training camp, there was some question about this cornerback core.
Right.
They've played well, but you sort of wonder again, you know, how much of what the defense is doing is about the offense struggling, how much of maybe Thornton coming on is that he's facing a team that doesn't have like a true number one cornerback or anybody really physically who can match him, although Jonathan Jones can really, really run. But you wonder about that. And you learn something, obviously, seeing a guy like that, a rookie like that, perform against another team. You learn some of it seeing him against the Giants. I think you'll learn even more against Carolina.
Yeah, you mentioned the depth of the Patriots cornerbacks, which I still think is a big question here. This is different. I mean, Carolina's got two recent top 10 picks, guys whose profile is shutting down a guy exactly like Tyquan Thornton. So if he comes out and he's beating those guys, if he's having the kind of regular consistent success against those guys, that he's had against the Patriots corners, it's game on. At that point, I think that the hype train, as Matt Dolph calls it, is fully off the rails, and we go nuts and order all the jerseys, and we're really looking at something.
Can I ask you quickly? Yeah. Do you feel there's sort of extra pressure? I don't want to say on Tyquan, but on the Patriots with this pick, because as much hype as Tyquan is getting here, the hype train for George Pickens has reached, you know, I would say European bullet train proportions in Pittsburgh, and even with some of the national guys who have gone to their camp. And he had that nice toe tap touchdown catch against Seattle in Pittsburgh's season opener. Is there sort of pressure there where there's this comparison between Thornton, who went a couple of picks ahead of George Pickens to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and I would even say Sky Moore as well, who went two picks later, right? All three of those guys going within five picks. Moore's kind of a different sort of player, so it's an imperfect comparison, but you always see that. And especially with the Patriots, that's the game we love to play, right? They might draft a good player, but could they have drafted a better player? I think you're going to see that with their top two picks, right? They take Cole Strange and potentially as a safety needy team. You saw Dax Hill, you saw Lewis Cine go later. Like, yeah, that I think is going to be throughout his career. That's going to be something we talk about with Tyquan Thornton, where he's going to get put next to George Pickens and put next to Sky Moore. And it's going to be, you know, okay, well, yeah, Tyquan Thornton's good, but could they have had a better player? You know, and granted, that throws out the whole development aspect of it.
Yeah.
The Steelers are the anti-Patriots when it comes to developing wide receivers, and it's nature versus nurture. And you don't know if two guys, if you flip the teams, end up with the same careers. We'll throw all that out. Yeah, I know it is something that I think will be, for better or worse. No, you're right. That is something that will be a conversation as long as those two are in the league. And week two, if Thornton really kind of finishes camp strong here, that's going to be one of the headlines of that game, is going to be, you know, rookie receivers battling it out. I think that's going to be a fun one. Before we move over to the defensive side of the ball, anybody else on offense, like this week, particular, the joint practice setting that you're interested to watch?
Yeah. And I mean, I know he wasn't out there today, but at least I don't think he was, but I mean, Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah. He wasn't third practice in a row. He wasn't out there.
So I don't know if he'll be able to participate, but if he is, that's a guy I'm interested in. I feel like it's kind of flown under the radar, that move to right tackle for him. I mean, it's an interesting thing for a guy in the last year of his contract. It was a first round pick to be a left tackle. They're moving him to right tackle and flip-flopping him with Trent Brown. And he's making more than $10 million this year. And Yadni Kajust has been, you know, pretty good, I think, so far in camp. So that's an interesting one. And I would say, you know, Cole Strange would be another guy for me just as a rookie. Yeah. Certainly, given what they're trying to do schematically offensively in terms of more of the outside zone stuff, I have to go back and sort of check myself and say, like, oh, I get it now. This Cole Strange pick to me makes more sense. If that's what you're trying to do, you do really need athletic guards, and he's very athletic. And I don't know how many of those guys the Patriots really thought were available in this draft. And you need that. I mean, he's a huge component, I think, of what they're trying to do offensively. Yeah. So I want to see how he is able to progress. And then, you know, Jonnu Smith is a guy, if they can get more out of Jonnu Smith, his first year was kind of rocky. It seemed like they only got him the ball on swing passes and gadget plays. They didn't really trust him to be able to make the right reads in a sight adjustment offense. But if everything's simplified, that's a guy where if you can get the ball in his hands with a head of steam moving forward, he should be able to make some plays and break some tackles. So those are some guys I'll have my eye on.
So to go back to Wynn.
Yeah.
Because he's an interesting one, right? He moves positions. Last year, his contract, the offensive line struggles while he's out there. And then after the game Thursday, Bill says Yadni Kajust, who's filled in there at right tackle, is having the best camp he's ever had. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that Kajust is going to catch Wynn, right? It's a very small sample size over a three-year career, but is it one of those things where he's in the last year of his deal? It's a valuable position. Like, could Kajust push him? I talked earlier about how this is a really good Panthers defensive front. If Kajust has a good week, I don't know if the Patriots would do that, would move on from Wynn, but I think that's something that starts getting brought up. You kind of have to at that point, right? Especially if Wynn doesn't get out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, you know, how do they feel about Justin Herron? How do they feel about the overall tackle depth? I'll tell you, I mean, I wouldn't put it past Belichick. I respect him for this, certainly. If he feels like one guy, regardless of pedigree or pay grade, is better than another guy, he's going to play the best guy. So if Yadni Kajust catches Isaiah Wynn, do I think they trade Isaiah Wynn? And would they get blasted for having a $10 million swing tackle? Probably. But if he feels like that's the better guy and you need to have some depth at that position, because we all know Trent Brown can get hurt, you need to have a swing tackle. If Isaiah Wynn ends up being a $10 million swing tackle, That wouldn't surprise me all that much.
No, it wouldn't. I think that's it wouldn't be the weirdest thing to happen in a Patriots training camp, right? So on the defensive side of the ball, the thing that stands out to me, we talked a lot about this offseason. They need to get faster, more athletic on defense, right? They need to keep up with these quicker offenses. Well, here comes Christian McCaffrey and Chuba Hubbard, two really good dynamic pass-catching backs. I think, at least personally, I've been really high on what we've seen from the linebackers, Mack Wilson, Raekwon McMillan especially. This is another, I think, example where, okay, here's an issue last year. It looks like they've addressed facing themselves. Now let's see how real this fix really is. Would you agree?
I 100% would agree with that. And I thought Jerod Mayo was pretty good. Obviously, a guy who has experience playing the linebacker position. I thought he said something really interesting today, which was just because you can run, that doesn't mean you can cover. Right. And so certainly Mack Wilson and Raekwon McMillan can run. They can really run. They've upgraded the athleticism there. Now the question is, you know, how proficient are they in coverage? And it's hard to read anything, obviously, from preseason games. But, you know, I think sort of early on, at least what you see is maybe the plan with those two guys is, you know, you sort of put them in a zone, sort of in like a hook zone. And you use that athleticism to be able to chase guys down and tackle them and make sure that if a guy does catch a ball out of the backfield, that they're not getting the yards after catch. You know, that would make a lot of sense, obviously. But in terms of, you know, man to man out of the backfield, Christian McCaffrey's as good as it gets as a pass catching back
right
out of the backfield. I mean, it's pretty much Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara. Those are the two best in the league. So certainly a test for the Patriots to see how they want to approach that with their linebackers. And ideally, if you're the Patriots, given some of the issues they've had in the past against the run, you would love to be able to maybe keep some bigger players on the field, some linebackers on the field who can really run and still feel like you can catch guys in space. You can run guys down in space. You know, they're loaded at safety, which is great. But as we've seen in the past, you know, sometimes when you ask an Adrian Phillips, you ask a Kyle Duggar, or maybe they'll ask a Jabril Peppers to basically play a hybrid linebacker role, you can kind of get rolled by the other team's running game because that's asking a lot for those guys.
You talked before about the depth at the cornerback position. It's kind of been a surprising plus to this point, but Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, Terrace Marshall, Rashad Higgins, can they keep it going or does that bubble pop this week?
I think they can keep it going. Like I said, I don't think they have a true number one. Jalen Mills has played really well, but in my mind, he's just not a true number one. He doesn't have that type of physical ability. But I think what they lack in maybe top-end talent, they have in depth and competitiveness and competency, and I like that. What will be interesting to me is will they sort of play as much man coverage as they've played in the past, or do they sort of migrate more towards zone coverage, which maybe would be a little bit better? It's a little bit easier to, I think, function if you don't have a true number one, if you play a little more zone. But I don't know. But I would say I agree with you. The cornerback group has been a pleasant surprise there. Like, I think there's some real depth and some options in that group, especially if Jonathan Jones, and I heard you on 98.5 with Zolak and Bertrand, you know, talking about Jonathan Jones playing the boundary corner. If he can do that, that really gives them some very interesting options in that backfield.
Do you have any interest in following the Panthers QB battle? Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. Like, I know the Patriots, it doesn't directly affect them. They might have some impact on it, right? To see how these guys look this week. Does that have any juice for you?
It does have some juice for me because I'm sort of curious about, well, I'll just say this. I have some personal investment in the Baker Mayfield thing. I would say an early adopter of Baker Mayfield won't be very good. I don't think he's going to be a good pro. I don't think he's going to live up to it. And he has a chance certainly to prove me wrong in Carolina. The Cleveland experience, I'd say, was uneven at best. I think he was a better actor than a quarterback, even though he had his moments as a quarterback in Cleveland. So I am intrigued by that because Baker Mayfield's kind of this reclamation project. And honestly, I'm also intrigued from the standpoint of Matt Rhule. And this is a guy that if he were to be removed from that job in Carolina, and I think it's really the quarterback thing that's going to decide his fate. You know, do they find a competent quarterback? But if he were to be removed from that job, Alex, I think he'd be one of the hottest head coaches in the country if he were to go back to the college level. So that's fascinating to me too. I mean, I think he would snap up a college job immediately if for some reason he were to get fired this season as coach of the Panthers. And he has a lot riding on trying to, you know, basically figure out, can he get Darnold and Baker Mayfield, two former, you know, top five picks, that quarterback position. Can one of those guys, I don't know. Were you in Charlotte last year when they played the Panthers?
No.
So I was there, and I'll tell you, that was kind of like the nadir, like the low point of the Sam Darnold experience. I mean, really, he had to answer a lot of pointed questions from the Charlotte media. Robbie Anderson expressed frustration with his play after the game. That was kind of like the writing was on the wall for Darnold. I can't believe Darnold's even still on the team at this point. So I am fascinated a little bit by that quarterback competition.
Well, to bring it back to Rhule, and the other interesting thing there, you talk about, you know, he'd be one of the hottest names in the college coaching carousel, and he probably would. If he wanted to stay in the NFL as a coordinator, we heard Bill Belichick rave about him this morning, right? If this thing that they're doing with Patricia and Judge doesn't work out and they're back on the market next year, he would be a name I would expect to hear connected. I'd put it out there just based on what Bill said about him today. And he runs kind of a version of this offense that I think the Patriots want to run. It's a little more of a vertical version of it, but, and you know, the Baylor connection now, Bill's starting to draft Baylor players. I in that sense, actually, I didn't even think about it that way. It is really interesting because Matt Rhule, it seems like maybe with the joint practice and everything, is he starting to get into that circle a little bit. And then if he becomes available, you never know.
You never know. And that segues me to sort of a question I wanted to ask you. And one of the questions that I have just overall with this whole sort of offensive, you know, I hesitate to say it's a new offense. I just think they're emphasizing different concepts and elements within the offense, at least in this part of training camp. But if you're going to do that, the one thing that I that really baffles me is, why wouldn't you go out and this person doesn't have to be the offensive coordinator or even the play caller. You could still have Judge and Patricia. But why wouldn't you go out and get a position coach or some offensive coach, you know, maybe like a Zach Robinson, who was drafted by Belichick and was here as a quarterback oh so briefly from the Rams, who has experience in the McVay system, somebody that could come in and sort of has familiarity with some of the concepts you're trying to emphasize here and could help you with that. And again, that person doesn't have to lead the offense or be the play caller, but I think that would certainly help. And I'm a little perplexed that they didn't do that. I have a hard time believing that Bill doesn't have enough friends in the coaching industry that could recommend someone or enough familiarity with someone who was here before as a player or something, that they couldn't bring somebody in to sort of help with this.
No, I think it's a really good question. It's one I've thrown out there too. And look, if you're going to change your offensive scheme, your offensive coordinator moving on is a good time to do it. I know people say, why are you screwing with the young quarterback? Well, you'd almost rather do it in his second year than like his sixth year, right? If things are working on after you've paid him. But it's a good point. Zach Robinson was the guy I brought up a number of times. Another guy, Liam Cohen, who actually is now the OC of the Rams. I forget where he was previously.
Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Local guys from Rhode Island, coached at Maine. I mean, and he's somebody who's very proficient in this more zone offense. It's a very fair question. And I don't know that we've gotten an answer to it. I don't know that we'll ever get an answer to it. I don't know that there isn't. There might not be an answer.
Maybe
to it.
Not.
It might have been just, hey, these are the best coaches, you know, flat out. We believe these are the best football coaches available. And we'd rather have good coaches learn a new scheme than not as good coaches teach a scheme that they already know. Like that, it might be something like that. So it's a really good question. The one thing I've wondered is Matt Patricia faced it a lot, like faced this scheme in Detroit. I wonder if they're having him, for lack of a better term, try to reverse engineer it.
No, that's scary.
Right? Because we will remember when we first started asking players about this, one of the common answers was essentially, well, he's seen a lot of different defenses. So he knows what a defense would try to do to stop us. So he can use that to make us better. That's what Max said that. I think David Andrews said something like that. So I kind of thought about that. And it's like, well, all right, he spent a lot of time trying to stop these zone schemes. Does that maybe give him insight into a way to build it that takes out some of the flaws that maybe a purely offensive coach wouldn't see? Like, this is just me guessing. I wonder if that is part of their thought process there.
Yeah, I'm intrigued too. And one of the questions, and really honest, you know, we have more questions than answers when it comes to the offense. And I think in some regards they do too. Obviously they know things that we don't,
right?
In terms of what they're trying to do, the goals, you know, that's clear. They have more information than we do. But one of my big questions on this is, whose idea was this? Was this Bill's idea? Did Bill do a study and look at this and say, I want to migrate to this offense, and then tell Patricia and Joe Judge to teach it? Or was this, he brought Patricia in and Patricia said, here's what I think we should do. And Bill said, I like that. It's a good idea.
Yeah, no, that's another good one. I mean, Patricia was here last year too. So you think maybe it's something the two of them worked on and then Joe Judge got brought in, right? Because this probably wouldn't have happened Like, I don't think this happens if McDaniels doesn't take the Raiders job.
I agree. No, I agree right. with you. I don't think it happens either, but I'm just sort of curious if Bill looked at it as an opportunity to migrate to a system he's always admired. And then he feels, because let's be honest, you know, they've at times had trouble, the Patriots, stopping this system.
Yeah.
Whether it's Kyle Shanahan or Mike Shanahan. So is it one of those deals where it was Bill's idea? Or again, was it something, as you mentioned last year when Patricia was here, and it's like one of those special projects Bill assigns, and Patricia comes to him and says, here's what I think we should do. And Bill's like, oh, I like that. That's a good idea. Let's do this. I'm curious who's responsible for saying we're going to change this.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the fact that they had trouble against it, because Bill does that with players, right?
Yes.
There's guys who succeed against the Patriots, and then a year or two later, they're free agents, and here they are. I was sure Isaiah McKenzie was going to be a Patriot this year. I really thought he was. Could he do the same thing with the scheme? Like, that's it, it's not that far removed, right? And my thing, and I know we're going a little over here, and I apologize. My thing when I'm looking at, like, the Patriots and trying to project what they do, right? Everybody likes to call the Patriots unpredictable and Bill Belichick unpredictable. And there is some truth to that. But I think when you do anything, as long as Bill's run the Patriots, right, 22 years, there's just naturally going to be patterns. And I feel like that approach is validated because you see these patterns manifest themselves sometimes. And it can be in minimal ways. It can be in big picture ways. So I would call that a pattern. And it's a little different with the scheme versus a player, but it's something that we know he's thought along those lines before.
No, absolutely. And one of the things I give Bill a tremendous amount of credit for is that he's a student of the game. And people, when you say that phrase, people think that means the history of the game. Yeah, he has that. But he's also always trying to talk to coaches who are doing things that are new and innovative. Remember a few years ago when Chip Kelly was sort of the offensive guy du jour, and they were running the hurry up stuff. Like, yeah. He's always interested in what's cutting edge. What are some new thoughts and ideas that are being popularized and injected in the game at different levels? And he's always interested in that stuff. And he remains a student of the game and sort of the evolution of the game and where it's headed and where it's going.
He is Chris Gasper. He covers the Patriots for the Boston Globe. You can also hear him on Gasper and Murray on weekends on the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Patriots pregame show 3 hours prior to kickoff on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Also, you can follow him on Twitter @CGasper. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Alex, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.